Good morning, listeners, and we've got a fantastic CEO story today. We've got Paolo Pirajanian, the founder and chief executive of Embodied. Paolo, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the company?
Good morning, Casey. Sure. So we are a startup that started about 4 years ago, venture capital backed, based in Pasadena, California, with an amazing team of about 50 people. And we are building Animate Companions, which is an interactive robot that can interact with you using eye contact, body language, and conversation. And the application that we are aiming for is in the product called Moxie to help children with social, emotional, and cognitive development.
Fantastic. So this is all very prevalent right now as we see a huge move towards robotics, VR, and AR. How did you end up getting into this field if we kind of rewind a little bit and move out?
Absolutely. I've been doing this all my life, actually. So I didn't start doing robotics recently. I've been doing robotics for the last 25 years plus. As a matter of fact, I started by finishing my PhD degree in Denmark in the field of robotics, moved to the US to work at NASA JPL, and did some research on rovers for Mars exploration. And funny enough, that was my childhood dream job, to work for NASA. And when I was there, and JPL is also based in Pasadena, so when I was there, I got contacted by this gentleman called Bill Gross, who founded Idealab, one of the very early incubators, and had massive success during the dot-com boom. And Bill wanted to start a company in robotics. And I was fascinated by entrepreneurship, so I left my dream job to learn more about entrepreneurship and joined Bill's company to start this robotics company.
That's a really good segue there, Paolo, because for those who don't know Bill, Bill Gross is the guy with the most unicorns, I think. He's had 7 or 8 unicorns, which means he's taken startups from zero to plus $1 billion in valuation. So that is a pretty big deal in itself, that Bill was, one, interested; two, you built a relationship together; and three, he wanted to back you specifically. So he definitely saw something magical in you. Can you run us through kind of how that relationship developed?
It was interesting. I mean, actually, early on, he wanted to build a company to become the Microsoft of robotics. So very bold vision. This was in 2001, so way early. And although he did not have domain expertise, so he was looking for people that have that, and I happened to be that person that he sought out. When we first discussed, I expressed that I thought that it was way too early to think about having a software platform enabling robots, because at the time there were no robots, particularly in year 2001. But what happened is that I got super fascinated by Bill himself. I could see his vision, he being very bold, and I wanted to learn from him about entrepreneurship. So despite the fact that I didn't believe in the business model and the goals of the company, I thought we could do something amazing together. So I joined him. The company started developing some amazing technologies, but never got traction, actually, in business side. So unfortunately, my intuition was right. But on the other hand, we actually created some amazing technologies for vision-based navigation and mapping. So in 2008, Idealab actually decided to shut down that company. And I negotiated to take the core technologies that my team and I had developed and spin it out into a new co, which became Evolution Robotics. And new co's business model was to go vertical and apply this technology in different vertical domains. At the time, the domain that was successful in consumer robotics was actually robotic floor care, robotic vacuum cleaners, which was dominated by iRobot. So we went.
Pause for a second there, Paolo. I think this is a pivotal point, because what I'm hearing is the incubator that had backed you, that you kind of had a feeling about, turned out to be true, but you didn't give up. You then repivoted that work and that energy into a different direction so you could still utilize it somewhat and then continue to pursue your dream.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think as an entrepreneur you can give up. Exactly. I think persistence and perseverance are one of the key characteristics in success, because most of the time, and you will hear this from most entrepreneurs, is the plan you started with is not necessarily the plan you end up with. So you gotta keep learning rapidly, as fast as possible, and finding your way. So at Idea Lab, one challenge for us was developing some technologies that had never been done before, and that took a different type of perseverance. And then after the spin out into the new co, we had to figure out how to build a business out of this. And that was really about following the money, looking at what markets have worked and what hasn't. We had a few options. Robotic floor care seemed to be a pretty good one that was a good fit with our technology. And we said, let's go build a product and launch it. And by the way, it's interesting. My board at the time tried to dissuade me from that, because they said, you have never launched a consumer product. It takes manufacturing in China, supply chain management, marketing, sales, distribution, all of that. You got customer support. You have none of that. And I said, you're absolutely right, but I think it's the right thing for us to do, and we'll learn. And we did very rapidly. So in 2008, we spun out the company. In 2010, we launched our first product that in the first quarter did $5 million in revenue. Can you hold on a second? I think for some reason my smoke alarm is beginning to... Yeah, so in 2008, we spun out the company. 2010, we launched our first product, which was an automatic floor cleaner for hard floors using our navigation technology. We did $5 million in the first quarter of launch, which was fantastic. And then the next 12 months, we did $25 million. So growing really rapidly. And then iRobot made an offer to acquire us, which we took, because at the time, this is 2010, it was extremely, extremely hard to raise money for a robotic startup. So we thought by merging with iRobot, we can actually further our mission a lot farther. And that's why we took the merger offer.
So we've took a few steps forward there. If we break it down in terms of, you didn't have any of the kind of the supply chain, the launching of product, yet you still managed to launch a very successful product, did 5 million in Q1, 25 in year one, which is amazing numbers. How did you build a team, or what were kind of the key steps along the way in order for you to get there? Because I'm assuming you couldn't do it yourself.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, it's because of an amazing team. It was the focus and dedication on the clear mission of what we need to do, and a dedicated team that wanted to win and got the support from each other to actually go do what they needed to do. It was extremely hard work. So if you have a high-performing team, there is no obstacle big enough for them not to be able to just dominate it, right? So it was just pure willpower and smart people working hard around the clock against the odds and learning fast to go get it done. And we were literally just a team of less than 25 people.
That's impressive. So then at that point, let's just fast forward into the iRobot conversations. How did those conversations initially come about? Did they reach out to you? Were you guys actively looking to be acquired? How was that dynamic?
No, we had actually just closed a new round of financing. I think it was a $12 million round, which was not big enough. We probably wanted to raise 30, 40, but as I mentioned, at the time, it was extremely hard to get a VC's interest in robotics. So we had just closed it. We were growing rapidly and got a call from Colin Engel of iRobot, who started exploring whether we could put the companies together. And of course, as a classical right answer in that situation is no, we are not interested in doing so. But I was, actually, to be honest. But if you want to get acquired, you better start by saying, I don't want to get acquired. Otherwise, your price is going to be very different. So then it led to actually a written offer. And then the process is really painful to go through an acquisition because it's almost like a proctology exam. They have to learn and evaluate everything and do due diligence on every single bit. There's no stone unturned.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. So then you got acquired, and then how was it then living with the iRobot team?
So it was interesting. I mean, there was both pros and cons. Now, one of the challenges of acquisitions is integration, right? You have two companies with different sizes, different cultures coming together to work together. And we'll spend a lot of time integrating the two companies together. And usually there's a culture clash, and there was in this case as well. You have this tiny, rapid team that had full autonomy before and knew how to execute. And then you have this bigger company that is more process oriented, and you gotta check boxes and go through certain process, which slows you down significantly. And we had to figure out how to mesh them together. And I spent a lot of my own personal time trying to educate both parts about the benefits of working together and how to work together. It was not a smooth ride, but we got it done. We actually successfully integrated the two parts together. And which benefited the company significantly. I mean, iRobot's Roomba, which is their flagship product at the time, was way behind on the technology curve. They had huge market share, but you could see competition was on their heels. And if we had not integrated our navigation technology, visual mapping and navigation technology onto Roomba, it could have become super challenging for iRobot now. But by that integration, it allowed them to maintain their leadership position in the market.
Now, that's really good. And then when we talk about integration and change management, what were some of the tough points? Because like you said, it's not all roses and bloom when you integrate in with a company. What were some of those tough parts? And then how did you actually break that down and get everyone aligned in the same direction?
I mean, the alignment actually came at the top. So Colin was committed and aligned with me, and we both had to roll up our sleeves to start educating the organization. So as an example, I actually remember at one of the board meetings at iRobot, this is funny, I've taken the battery out, my thing is still beeping. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it, it's fine.
So we were aligned at the top, Colin and I, and wanted to make the change. And we could both see the benefits on being agile and fast on one hand, to innovate faster, and then on the other hand, to have solid product process to make sure the quality of the product is maintained and so on. So you wanted to have best of both worlds. So we started dividing things up in what we called Horizon 1 business, Horizon 2 business, and Horizon 3 business, and came up with a portfolio investment strategy about how do you make investments in each of these horizons. Horizon 1 is basically your current cash cow. Horizon 2 is the upcoming products that are in the works, and Horizon 3 is speculative bets down the road.
Yeah.
And decided how to make bets on that. Then the second one was, how do you train your staff or retrain your staff to understand what processes to use in each of these horizons? For instance, Horizon 1, which is the current business, probably needs to be a lot more process oriented so you can maintain quality and so on. Horizon 2, you gotta be a lot more agile. Because you want to quickly learn fast and innovate. So what is known as agile methodologies is what works really best there. And Horizon 3, you got to let the team explore. Even things that may not seemingly not be interesting sometimes lead to interesting outcomes and so on. So we start, I spend a lot of my time trying to document the different types of mindsets and process. We had classes where we were retraining staff and so on. So it's a lot of heavy lifting, especially when you want to retrain and change culture. I learned the hard way. It's extremely hard work to do.
Okay, so let me repackage some of what I'm hearing is that the company then aligned at a leadership team level and then mapped out different scenarios for different teams and different processes within each of those scenarios so that at a team level, people were very clear on the objectives and how to reach them. And then it's just about integrating that and kind of making that into a core belief of the business.
Correct. And I think one core ingredient is actually for each of these teams, how to work together to get the job done, right? Because the same methodology doesn't apply in the different horizons of a business. So some companies are extremely good at doing that. I think Amazon is super strong at knowing how to apply different types of processes to different stages of a business, which is why they're growing so rapidly, right? And growing in so many different directions from e-commerce to AI, you know, they are super good at doing that well.
Yeah, great. Okay, so then let's fast forward on from iRobot. You then started Embodied, which is where you are today. So can you tell us a little bit more about Embodied, about the Moxie and what and how that past experience work is working now?
Yeah, so I actually, so in 2015, I decided to leave iRobot in realization of the fact that I'd spent my last 10 years doing floor care, essentially. And when I was finishing my PhD in Denmark, that was not what I had envisioned myself doing, although it was technology that excited me. And the entrepreneurship part of it was exciting to me. And now I'm part of this bigger organization and helping do things like change the culture of the teams. And that was not what I envisioned for myself. I wanted to have bigger impact. So I left the company and started thinking about what my next step is and decided to go in this direction, which is helping, trying to intersect robotics with healthcare, right? So one area that I started looking into was helping the elderly population on one hand. Social isolation, for instance, is the number one cause to health deterioration and leading to death. So if you could have companionship for the elderly to help them be mentally sharp and motivated to do tasks for themselves and so on, you can actually prevent a lot of that. So as I was doing research in that area, I also stumbled upon the area with respect to children who have potentially developmental challenges. So neurodevelopmental delays and so on, such as autism, ADHD, anxiety, depression, and so on. And I thought, wow, that would be interesting if we could use the robots to help those children. So I started interviewing a few families who have children on the spectrum and share with them different concepts about a companion robot that could interact with your child and help them learn social skills, emotional regulation skills, and cognitive skills, and so on. And I saw huge enthusiasm around that and decided to form the company and have the first product be focused on children, and later stages of the product can help the elderly population.
Fantastic. It sounds like a great idea. And I know you guys have got the pre-launch coming out very soon, but let's talk about the business side of it in terms of how you then went from, again, different to the floor robots that you were working on for the last 10 years, but still in the robot field, to then build a new product and manufacture it in China and overseas and now remote working that's going on. How have you kind of dealt with all these different challenges at this stage compared to the initial robot challenges like over the last 10 years?
I think the ingredients are the same. It's about persistent perseverance, believing in yourself, believing in your team, and hopefully having an investor base that believes in you, right? So these are, I think, the core ingredients to overcome pretty much any challenge, especially with Embodied. This was clearly a moonshot. Like, it, the number of things we had to get right for it to succeed are just monumental. So I was lucky enough that now I have some track record. So when I went on the road to raise money, literally based on a PowerPoint presentation, I was able to, within 18 days, to get a term sheet that led then to closing of our seed round, which turned out to be $4.2 million, which is not bad for a seed round.
It's really good. So can we break that down? Because there's a lot of people out there, especially in the world right now, that are looking to raise funds and are struggling with it. So what advice could you give to them to help them with that initial raise on that seed round?
Be prepared as deeply as you can, right? Because this is going to be like the hardest exam you have ever attended when you meet with VCs. Be persistent. You're going to get a lot of no's, right? Do not get discouraged by that. You have to have belief in yourself. Do not get discouraged by people saying no, because literally majority of the conversations by a large margin are going to end up with a no. You only need to pop one of the balloons. Keep that in mind. You only need one VC to say yes to you for you to be able to put the round together. And sometimes it can take 3 months, sometimes it can take 6 months, sometimes it can take a year or more. You would have to have some proof of the product, prototype, some market research that indicates that people are interested in your offering and so on. If you have a track record, I was fortunate enough to have just exited, successfully integrated with iRobot, and I was able to get, again, it was not like people were standing in line to give me money. Believe me, it's not. Like, when you go back on the VC roadshow, you are nobody until you get a term sheet in your hands. So even though you have track record, that doesn't mean people are just going to stand in line and say, here, I'll hand you. They want to see you have thought this through, you have a plan that they believe in and so on. And we were lucky enough to get a term sheet from actually Intel Capital that then became the catalyst to the round coming together very quickly.
Fantastic. So thank you for sharing that. And then from that point onwards, after you'd raised the 4.2, how did you then execute and then build a successful business from there?
Yeah, then it's basically brick by brick, you got to start building it up, right? So one of the hardest parts is hiring good talent, especially at the ground level. People don't know. I mean, the same way you have to persuade investors to put money in your company, you've got to persuade every single hire to want to join your company. And usually the people that you want to hire, they are happily employed somewhere, right? And you're trying to pull them away from there. Usually you want to persuade them to take more equity and less salary. So this is a tough proposition. They really, again, have to believe in you and your vision, because you have nothing else to show for it. And then gradually, as you build your first prototype, then it gets slightly easier to hire talent. And when you get to a more mature prototype, then it's easier and easier, and you build the team that way. The other piece is just infrastructure, starting with payroll, 401k plan, health insurance, and so on. You don't have a staff. I have literally set those up myself with the help of maybe a friend of mine, which is a legal counsel to the company. Set up the entire infrastructure, which usually in a bigger company will take a staff of 20, 30 people to do. We were doing it like on the side while building the company and technology on the other side.
Wearing lots of hats, right? It's like you're doing whatever you need to do to get the job done. And I think, especially at the beginning, it's so fragile and getting the right talent in, but at the same time, building the right systems and processes that creates the foundation for the rest of the people to come in and layer on top of that, right?
Actually, speaking of that, one of the first things I did, given the experience I had before iRobot and experience I had at iRobot, one of the first things I did, like within literally the first couple of months of the company, I sat down and wrote the culture document for the company. Like, how do we behave? What are the values we believe in? How do we interact with each other? And I started handing it out to everyone that was onboarded. And I spent time with them explaining to them. And then in meetings, we would literally practice that until we started getting hang of it. And I think that is super important to do.
So what prompted you to do that? Because that's an actually really good point in terms of at its essence or at its core, a new business, the culture could go either way, right? So you have to really nurture that. So what made you really focus on that when there were so many other things to kind of focus on, that you prioritize the culture and the kind of the code of ethics?
I think that is the most important thing in the company, literally. I've been saying this recently. I think the team and team culture are the most important competitive advantage a company could have.
Fantastic.
Even though we have very deep tech, we are a deep tech company, right? Our technology is not shallow. I still say team and culture of the team is the most important competitive advantage, because technologies, product, market share, and so on all vary and go up and down and so on. But with a team culture, the right team culture, you can keep improving things and renewing the company and innovating again and capturing new markets and so on. It starts and ends with that, in my opinion.
No, I definitely agree with you. As we look to wrap up, the last question that I usually end with is, if you had to split your success between three factors, between drive, between skill, and between how lucky you were, how would you apportion between those three?
I would put luck outside of that equation. I don't think any of what I have done has been to do with luck, at least not much, if any. It's been hard work, sometimes against the odds, most of the times against the odds, sometimes completely uphill battle. I think drive is super important. Passion is related to that, because the passion for what you do gives you the energy and drive to keep moving forward against the odds, against the world telling you, you better give up. This is never going to happen. Just quit now. So I think that's number one. And I think that also leads to you wanting to acquire the skills you need in order to succeed. So the drive sort of encourages your willingness to want to improve your skills. I have a PhD in computer science and robotics. I've talked most of this conversation, or all of this conversation, has been about everything else other than that. And there is a lot of other skills you need to acquire in order to be able to be successful. And the other one is, I think, surround yourself with amazing people. Empower them to succeed and support them to succeed.
Fantastic. That's some great insight, and thank you for that. Paolo, what's the best way for people to reach out to you or learn more about Embodied?
So our website is embodied.com or moxyrobot.com, if it's easier to remember. And you can reach out to me by my name, paolo@embodied.com.
Fantastic. And we'll put the link just below so people can do that easier. Thank you so much for your time. You've been fantastic. And we wish you all the best.
Thank you, Casey. My pleasure.